The Tefl Commute, Season 16, Episode 2, Sports. Hi, everybody.
Hi, hello.
Hello.
I wonder how
welcome
many people
back.
Have just
welcome
stopped
back.
Listening because you said sports.
Yes. Yes. Finally, the Tefl Commute tackles that most elusive of topics, sports.
Brought to you by those three sporty people.
Yes.
Nice well, verb choice, though, Lindsay.
Yes. Welcome. Welcome, everybody. My name's Lindsay. This is the Tefl Commute. We're a podcast for language teachers. It's not about language teaching, but the topic always comes up. And we're going to really try to make it come up a lot today because our topic is sports. I'm joined by my fellow co-hosts. Hello.
Hi. Carrie here.
Hello. Sean here.
When we were planning this topic, we kept putting it off even after we'd planned it on the calendar because we were like, oh, what are we going to talk about? And it was interesting, after over 100 episodes of this show touching on all kinds of things, like unusual things, like irregularities and all, like invented languages and science fiction shows, gifts for teachers, stationery items, food, songs, film, we have always studiously avoided or subconsciously avoided sports. And we figured
which
we
is weird because it is like one of the staple topics of language.
It is an absolute staple topic. We have no problem doing stuff on like families and on animals and on all kinds of vocabulary, grammar, but sports we've never talked about. So
it's weird,
maybe Carrie will have part of the answer of why we particularly haven't talked about it, because she was going to bring something to start us off with.
I feel like he's labeling you there, Carrie.
I
think it's because of the topic that Carrie's going to ask us about.
We're all going to be labeled. Don't worry.
We're all going to be labeled. All right, go for it, Carrie.
You take the labeling.
Yeah, here comes the labeling. So I'm going to ask you and answer myself as well the question, how sporty are you on a scale of 1 to 10? But I think before we actually rank ourselves, we need to decide what does sporty mean.
I was going to ask you that because without answering the question too much, I think I'm quite sporty without being sporty.
Yeah. Okay. So it's kind of like, for me, I was thinking about it, and I'd labeled myself in one of our offline conversations as being like 100% unsporty.
Yes, you did.
Okay, hold on. What does that mean exactly? Why am I rejecting sport completely? So I think I was thinking about it as being competitive team sport, which was something that I was thinking of myself as being completely unsporty. But then, I mean, there's it's not just competitive team sport, is it? So is it, do you do sport? Do you enjoy watching sport? Does sport play any part in your life at all? Yeah, so all of those questions. So taking that in to consideration, where do you rank yourselves?
I'm ranking myself in how am I ranking myself? Sporty, not sporty. Is that it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
1 is totally unsporty. 10 is 100% sporty.
So I guess like 100% sporty is like, not only do you like consume it in terms of watching and following, but also you like do it.
And I think like it's that thing of, it's like a really important part of who you are and what you do, and you'd miss it massively if you couldn't do it, etc. Or
so
like you have to tune in to your favorite sport when it's happening.
I'm a 6, I think, then.
Okay. And do you want to give us a little bit of context on your ranking?
So I'm not like, I will follow sports at some big ticket events. I can get caught up in the emotion.
Am I allowed to embarrass you, Lindsay?
But I do. Well, you in a second. I'll finish how sporty I am or not. But I am not. I'm not really into. I'm like, I don't follow. I don't follow a local team. I tried to desperately follow the local football team, couldn't really do it after a year. I do enjoy partaking of some sports myself, but not competitive sports. Never liked playing football, never liked playing basketball. I'll do exercise. I like swimming and stuff like that, but never been a big fan. Never been big on pushing my kids to do competitive sports, certainly not football or hockey or any kind of Canadian sports like that. So, but I do like doing sport. And it, like when Kerry said, you know, if it was taken away from me, I would feel a loss of like exercise if that was sport related thing. And if there were no sports at all, like I do like the concept of sport translated into board games.
My embarrassment, completely out of context, one day I got this WhatsApp message early in the morning. It goes, "I've won." And you're like, "You what?" And he's playing. He's been playing esports. I mean, how esporty is Lindsay?
Yes, well, does it esports?
You've got your Formula One team, haven't you, there, Lindsay?
Yes, I do like playing but not esport, not professional esports, just like sporting simulation games. So yes, so at six. Point, that's what I'm going to say.
At which point we're kind of 11 or 12 or something? If we're going to ask how esports both of you are.
No. Well, let's. I'm going to say. Well, six.
I'm not esporty, that's for sure. But no? I am sporty.
Okay.
I would say I'm higher than Lindsay. On that scale, I don't know why. I've probably put myself as a number 8, maybe slightly higher. When I explain, you can tell me if I should be higher in a moment. So I am sporty. I come from a long line of, I don't do as many sports now. I do try and do some sports in the same context as Lindsay. I play a bit of tennis and I go to the gym, those kind of things. I grew up as a sporting family. I used to be a hammer thrower and a triathlete when I was young. So about almost 40 years ago, I was the youngest athletics coach in the UK. I do come from a sporting background in that sense. These days, I'm sporty. I am a qualified cricket coach. I coach cricket here in Oxford. I coach one of the teams of the Oxford Cricket Club. So that would work there. Obviously, I have a young son as well, youngest son, who is into sport all the time. So, you know, sport is a big part of our weekly schedule. He plays cricket, rugby, athletics, you know, swimming. They're all his choices. We don't, not like Lindsay, we don't force him to do any of those. And I am a member of a cricket club and go to watch cricket as my free time. So
give us a number.
Maybe higher in that sense. I mean, if you take the if you take it away, I mean, I do, in particular with cricket, I would miss it incredibly with it. That's what I like to do, and that's how I like to spend my free time, in terms, certainly from a watching point of view. So, yeah.
Okay, so I'd say that takes you up to a 9.
Okay, a 9, thank you.
In our kind of sportiness, because I don't think it has to be like what level you play at or anything, but I think it's more that thing of how personally important it is to you. Okay. So I think my problem is with ranking myself that I am probably comparing myself to other members of my family and feeling that I am much less sporty than they are. So I have a partner who's just like football. If you took that out of his life, I don't know. He'd survive, but barely. My son, he's massively into kind of martial arts and weightlifting and all that kind of stuff. So there's another kind of very sporty person. And me, you know, I like walking the dog. I like swimming in the sea. Yeah. Like, you know, but they're not sports. I don't think any of the physical activity I do, like I go to the gym, but it's to keep fit and healthy. It's not because it's like a sport for me. When I was younger, I used to follow loads of sports, but I think it was just like social, not peer pressure as much as just that's what other people were doing, so I did too. So go and watch rugby matches, being Welsh and at a time when Wales actually was winning a lot. Living in Spain, followed the Spanish football teams when they're being successful as well. But I think I would put myself at a 4.
Right. Although just doing this exercise suddenly makes me think this is a way in for teachers who want to do a conversation about sports. Even just a simple question is like that, with all the nuances, gave us, you know, a good 5 minutes of talk that could go on.
It did. And your actual weightlifting reminded me of actually something else, ELT, as well. Of course, Catherine Walter, the linguist, is the world record holder in powerlifting. Which just reminded me, just came into my head that we'll probably end up talking about celebrities or people and sports. But in ELT, we actually have this person who is, you know,
an ELT celebrity who's a sports celebrity.
The two can overlap.
It's not impossible.
I mean, in terms of like continuing on with the theme of like teaching in sports, I think this is a great, like a kind of speaking activity. One of the things I wanted to bring to the table on this was like what, and I think all of us have had times where you have to teach sports, right? So like, just as Sean said, it's one of the most common things. Like there's no book that doesn't have a unit which touches on sport, and your syllabus of sport will often come up. So here's a question. What are your pet hates or pet loves of teaching the sport lesson, given that some of us are more or less sporty than we thought, but I think we're not like all huge sports fanatics.
You know, can I change the question to you two? Because you probably write more about that. Because as a teacher, I find sports lessons utterly dull.
Well, yes, that's okay. We think it's hard often to get the right. No, because you could,
but it's all like pre-intermediate. It's going to be play. Let's do a thing about
play. It's going to be play, do, go.
yeah. And then there'll be some vocabulary about court, pitch, field. Yeah, and then there might be
racket.
Bat, there you go. Yeah.
Ball.
Word building. You know.
Word building. Like, yes.
Whatever.
And I just wonder, as materials writers, is it not a little bit samey?
Well, it is one of my pet hates, is always feeling that it is the same thing. But also a pet hate or frustration of mine is like, what sports do you choose, especially if you're making materials for an audience you don't know? If I was doing it for my own students, like here in Spain, it's pretty obvious, but then I don't even know if I have to teach them. Like, football is the same and everybody knows that word already, and they may know many of the words about football, but
I mean, they almost lead themselves, but in the sense that the students, certainly if the class is sporty, you were like, you know, in the Czech Republic it would always be hockey, you know, because that's what they do. And I presume Spain would be is football.
I think it's much
football, tennis.
It's much more local because teaching here, we live on the beach. Basically, it's a very beachy kind of town, so it's much more to do with water sports. Or like the one that I really did love, actually adding into course book material for quite a while, was the tricking, which is a kind of a parkour that happens on the beach, and they like these big kind of boys and bury them in the sand, and then they kind of use them as a trampoline and do all kinds of acrobatics and stuff off it. It's kind of like capoeira meets parkour, but there's nothing to jump over, so you bounce off this.
Is this another kind of trope in the course, because this is finding the less common sports, right? Like you have your usual sports, and then there may be a reading on an oncoming sport. What about you? I mean, Carrie, what a pet hate for teaching sports, or pet love of teaching sports?
So
writing sports.
Absolutely, it's like my pet hate is the unusual sports in a course book sports unit. That like
extreme
someone,
ironing.
Underwater rugby. I've come across at least 3 times in 1 week, and it's like, really. Who would like, okay, I think underwater rugby has an interest span of about 10 seconds. Like, you know, the time it says for you, it takes for you to say it and for the students to process what you've said. And then that's it, really. I mean, like, what else can you say about underwater rugby? Maybe there's a lot to be said.
I'm going to have to Google it. I've never taught that particular.
extreme ironing was the one that I had seen a couple of times.
I thought you were going to say it's the one I wrote.
I did write one on extreme ironing for a magazine a long time ago.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
I mean, like, the images with extreme ironing are going to be potentially more interesting, I think, you know, sort of the underwater rugby.
There's also like all jumping out of planes, doing kinds of sports in the air, like from an airplane kind of thing, like weird basketball kind of stuff. Yeah, so
when you're inside a ball, what's that? Is that called zorbing? But it was like there must have been a time when it was new, I guess.
Yeah.
And it was in all the course books. So you'd have that page where you've got 3 different unusual sports, and again, I think it's from a visual point of view. There's a person bouncing around inside a huge transparent plastic ball. It looks fun. But
yeah, there's a really, I think it was earlier this year, nothing to do with sports, but it's absorbed. I'll have to try and find the Google and can share it on the YouTube and share it on the webpage, where one of those Zorb balls gets caught in the wind and flies off with someone inside.
It's so funny.
I kind of, I was wondering if you know, in usual sports, I put, whether you knew what the unusual sports were. The one I picked up was quad ball, which does appear in course books but under a different name, because quad ball has been the wokening, I think, of a sport that is a fantasy sport, but it's actually really now played. It's the new name of
Quidditch.
Quidditch. Yes.
Okay.
The Harry Potter.
Yeah.
That made it into a few books back.
Exactly. Oh, yes. Yeah. And I'm wondering, maybe it's just because of the gym I frequent, but whether you'll be writing about pickleball and paddleball soon.
No idea what either of those are.
They're both takes on tennis to a certain sense. So a pickleball is a plastic ball and a plastic bat. You know, like almost like a very...
Like a kid's tennis set.
Yeah, almost. Like, yeah, like but it's played.
Like a beach paddle set.
To a sense, yeah. But then now courts, you can now book and play this.
It's even here in
paddle,
and like yeah, it comes to us late.
And paddle ball is like bigger bats and half the size court.
Oh yeah, that's Spain.
Made for people.
That's Spain. Yeah,
and that's been around in Spain a long time. And
they seem to I was intrigued to think they've been around for 50-60 years, but they seem to be the words that, whether it is, maybe it's me, maybe it's observational bias, I've just seen places now offering these rather than like tennis and that, so I wondered if they'd ever make it, whether they would be the ones that now ended up as in the course.
Well, there is always, I mean, I think part of the reason why the list of sports, it feels dull to write and maybe dull to teach as well, there's a, in defense of the list of the sports words, is I do find that there is a students, when they come across that list, they're like, oh, good, I at least know three or four of these words. You know, so there's a sort of like a motivational bump where it's like, okay, this unit, I'm thinking more of teenagers and stuff here. They're like, okay, this unit, these words, instead of having to learn like 12 words, which I have no idea, like, you know, they're completely different, a lot of these will be the same, you know? And so there's a sort of, the sort of relief. I mean, the problem is not everybody likes sports in class. And so it's hard to get like, to get the motivation up if some people are just completely bored by it. I think there's another problem, of course, with sports in materials and in teaching and in preparing lessons on sports, is how often sports can veer into like hot button topics and areas which are tricky. I'm going to start with one, is how I found now I'm more and more reluctant to include the sort of glowing biographical text about a person who's overcome all kinds of adversity to become like a big sports star who's like, you know, so good, because I wrote a couple of texts on someone like that. It was Oscar Pistorius, the runner, the South African runner with no legs, right? He had two prosthetic legs, and he was listed as like a hero in at least three or four course books until, of course, he was accused of murder or murdering his partner, and all kinds of things. And, you know, it became, you know, really awkward. And I think that's so much the case now. You can't,
I mean, isn't that just celebrities as well, isn't it?
I think it's celebrities,
widen out these days.
Yeah, I mean, actors, and, you know, Me Too, and all of that. So it's like there's how many actor bios maybe have had to be scratched in second and third editions after that. And yeah, I think you have to like, yeah, they also, the thing like, you know, they die.
Yes, there's dying. They retire and they become very vocal about other issues that they cared about that are maybe not so heroic or important,
not so woke or whatever.
Yeah. But I mean, so there's a celebrity is one aspect where sports can become like quite tricky. I think there's also, in terms of just like the politics of sport, and I think a lot of it came down to like a lot of the stuff that came up in the last World Cup or in any of these big sporting events, the countries where they're hosted, more awareness about what goes into these huge sporting events, the controversy of
the associations that are running those events. Mm. I mean, like across the board, as soon as there's a lot of money involved, then there's corruption.
And I think
becoming more and more obvious as well.
Like I think it's right. It's not that it's more common. I think it's just more known now. So it becomes much more difficult to kind of talk about these things as if they're just sort of forces of nature and just these are these cool things that happened and stuff like that. And because so many people know so much more about it. I mean, Olympics is one example, like the cost of hosting an Olympics, the controversies around Olympics, who goes, who doesn't go, drugs, doping, scandals like that, you know, how does, you know.
It's interesting. I mean, the drug scandals, I think, have been there a while, but going back to the Olympics, who holds it, where they go. And I think one of the, obviously living in the UK, it still comes up now after the 2012 Olympics. We've got this idea of the sustainability. What was the legacy? What was sustained from there? And I think when we're now got this new kind of, well, not new, but as Kerry will obviously tell us, when we've got the green angle to ELT and on the idea of sustainability in ELT, sports doesn't actually fit in well with that, does it? You've got the Olympics isn't a very sustainable thing in many ways. Your football tournament, you know, in Qatar, they built huge new stadiums with air condition, you know, the air conditioned or whatever, not exactly the most environmental things that are going on. So it is quite difficult, I think, if you want to be, whereas we're trying to take that one track with the way that ELT is kind of raising social awareness against the sports. But I guess it makes for a good debate.
I mean, I think like in writing materials, for example, fairly recently I did write a page which was the three least green sports, you know, so you have the what you think might be the three least green sports, and so you take it from different angles. It's like, you know, sort of, so you could say it's the big crowd sports because people are traveling so much to go to those events or whatever. But if we just look at the sport itself, which one is it? So is it one of the big driving sports like Formula One or something like that? You know, sort of, so just the whole carbon emissions. Is it golf, which is actually up there in the sort of the top five?
Are you going to tell us, or do we have to find the answer?
Well, it's, I think that I think on lots of levels, skydiving is the one, because as
But is like that a sport?
There are competitions, aren't there?
Yes,
I have no idea.
Whole teams jump out together and do formation stuff and whatever, don't they? It looks very spectacular, but I think
my dad always said if there's scoring involved, if somebody else scores it, it's not a sport.
it's not a sport. It's people throw themselves out of aeroplanes. So that has a massive carbon footprint, obviously, because you have to go up in a plane each time that you jump out, and the number of times people do it is like, you know, things like, I don't know, 500, 1,000 times a year. That's a hell of a lot of flights in these little planes. And you can dig into a lot of sports and they will not be very clean.
Yes.
Actually, it's a very easy lesson to write. And it's quite a good one for students to just debate over if they want to decide what the ranking would be. How do you decide which has the biggest carbon footprint? What are you including in that? You know, so et cetera, et cetera. So it could be the same with entertainment as well, though. It doesn't have to be sport.
Right. Before we move on to sport, other...
As a course book topic. Thanks.
I don't know, there are clean ones. It could be one of the greenest sports.
That Sorry, Lindsay, what would you like to? You'd like to take a break, wouldn't you?
Well, I was going to say, let's take a little break and keep our topic of sports. Come back to some things about sports and language, why not?
Hello, TEFL Commute listeners. This is producer James here, just popping in with a quick message to say thank you for listening to the podcast. Don't forget that we're available on all podcast players. So if you want to find us, the easiest way to do that is to go to our website, tefelcommute.com, where you'll find links to all the major podcast apps. And while you're there, you can also find the archive of all of our episodes, going back over 100 episodes now, with the show notes and links. And of course, if you want to follow us on social media, you'll find us in all the regular places. Just search for TEFL Commute, all one word, lowercase. And finally, if you are a Google Podcast user, then I would recommend that you do that now, because Google is closing its podcast app at the beginning of 2024. So if you are a Google Podcast user, now is the time to get hold of another app and sort out your subscriptions. Obviously, first and foremost, get the Tevil Commute. Thanks for listening.
And we're back. So, having talked about sports as like discussion topics, as potentially troubling topics, which could also make for great discussions, why we like or dislike sports. I think the other area that we often touch on in the Tevil Commute here is language. So we always like to take a language look at sports. Sean, do you want to?
Like you say, I think it's always interesting what language comes and language we use, and we don't necessarily perhaps think about where it comes from. But of course, I would say sport is. There are a lot of idioms that we use on a day-to-day basis that are sports-based. You talk about things like dropping the ball, for example.
Yes, that's
sport,
true.
Sports-based idiom. If something is going close to the deadline, it's down to the wire, which is from horse racing and the wire in horse racing. You know, you've got a lot of ones to do, which are probably more about being a good marks person, you know, like calling the shots or hit the target. You know, archery ones from there. Below the belt from boxing. I'm trying to think what else we've got. Make the cut, that's a sporting one.
See, very early on in the program said that we were going to tackle sport.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't even realize they did that. I didn't even see myself do that there.
So obviously, and we were talking about the more prosaic nature of what we teach with sport in the first part of this podcast. But then again, I think we have to acknowledge that there is a lot of language that we use that is sport that has come into language because of sport. A couple more would be the ball is in your court, for example. Mm-hmm. Would be down one there, and perhaps something like he said, having just lost his page, taking sides. That again, that would be from it. So
like taking a rain check, for example, is that a sports one?
That would be the rain check, I think. So, well, certainly for like ball games, baseball games called off for rain, but I'm not sure the rain check. Yeah, maybe. If the game was canceled, maybe you used to get like a little ticket that you could come back for when it came back. I'm not sure.
Yeah, because I've always wondered about that when using it. I'm kind of like, you know.
It does sound like it could come from baseball.
Take a rain check. And like,
yeah.
Well, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and also like how it permeates other aspects like baseball, for example, North American English, they have like, you know, three strikes or you're out or down for the count or, you know, like, all kinds of stuff coming from baseball, certainly. Yeah. I would say American football as well, but I can't remember. I can't think of any expressions right now, and my ignorance is woefully huge.
Cricket, I'm thinking of a sticky wicket.
Yeah.
I think that might be the only one that I could
and you can make all sorts of perhaps non-PC things about bowling maidens over and stuff like that. But according to an internet search engine, a rain check originated from baseball in the 1800s.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yes. Excellent. Well, I wanted to share a couple of interesting things. You know, we often talk about English borrowing from other languages. One sport particularly borrowed a lot from French. Do you know what sport it is? It's one of our like top line level sports words we always teach.
I'm going to guess tennis.
Yes. Tennis, apparently. The word tennis comes from the French, this is according to my deep internet research, tenez, which is take that, which is what they would shout as they would hit the ball to it. Tenez, tenez, tenez. So it becomes tennis. And then love, like why is it like 15 love, 30 love, is that love is that said egg? Said to derive from the word for egg in Spanish, l'œuf.
In French. Oeuf.
L'œuf in French. The shape of a zero is the egg, l'œuf. So love would be, is that. And also that I think I could have guessed that nil comes from the Latin nihil, meaning nothing. And how nil is used in some sports as opposed to zero. Like you kind of give yourself away if you say, Like if a North American says, oh, so the football game was like 0-0, and a British person is like, no, it was 0-0, not that, 0-0. No,
going back to language, that is actually an interesting part of language that comes up in coursework, when to use nil, zero, love, with it. And those things like tie and draw and those things I think are interesting. But
yes, yeah. I mean, the other thing also, do any of you else have a good sports word origin story that you know?
You're the origin man.
I'm the origin man. So let me move on to my other thing, is how sports in ELT. So we've talked about like the language, we talked about the topics of sports, but I think sports also manifests itself in our classrooms in another way. And that's the kind of activities we do, because we have a few very famous activities that seem to be based on sports, and also how often we'll try to reproduce, or I've done in the past, and I've seen teachers do it, reproduce a sport in a way sort of in the classroom. The most famous example being grammar tennis. Have either of you done grammar tennis?
Of course.
Oh,
I
yeah.
even get my students.
Well, I think everybody, I always think everyone has. And then I did a workshop and I said, so grammar tennis, and I got blank looks. So Carrie, can you just explain to our listeners, in case they're also scratching their head, what is grammar tennis?
Okay, so I guess one example is you can do it with past participles or irregular pasts, and you have your two players. As Sean says, you get them to stand up, they have an invisible net, they have to knock their ball across the net and shout out a past participle or whatever it is you're practicing. And then their opponent has to hit the ball back with another past participle, and they keep going until they run out of past participles, at which point the ball is out of the court.
Ah, interesting, because I always had it that it was like, I started with the past participle, like you remember, eaten. And then the person had to return the serve with ate, and then I would have to go eat. And it was deliberately backwards, because students always remember eat, ate, eaten. But when then you force it backwards, it's harder to start with the third one, so they need to think a bit more. And then, so it would be like eaten, ate, eat, and then someone would go, gone. Went, go.
But when's the point decided?
Oh, no, it's just when someone blanks out. No, when someone draws a blank, like after 2 or 3 seconds, they can't think of something, or they call it out wrong. So I was like, gone, go. No, it was supposed to be blank.
I think we should also say it doesn't have to be limited to grammar. I've played it's a great brainstorming. You know,
vocabulary.
Do sports, do a vocab brainstorming.
Pronunciation. Yeah.
Any other sport games that you've played in the, that you've adapted for the class?
There was, I can't remember, I was trying to wrap my brains before we recorded, in one of those photocopyable books, you know, when you get photocopyable material for a game.
Yeah.
And it's many years ago now, but there was a very convoluted football game where the photocopy was the football pitch, and you had to, you know, move the ball forward.
No. So you had to pass
by answering questions and stuff like that. I just, the topic reminded me of it. I was looking for ages online. I couldn't find it at all, but I just sticks in my head from it.
I'm sure there are many teachers who have made similar things like that. Of course, if any of you listeners have done a similar sports thing, taken a sport and adapted it to language teaching, please drop us a line, let us know. We'd love to hear. Carrie, have you done any other sport things in class?
Or got kind of like, it's a very tenuous twist on basketball, but basically it would be that like the teams, you're doing a quiz or whatever it is, might even be like a really boring grammar exercise, but if you get the answer right, then you get the chance to throw a ball of paper into the waste paper basket.
If you
get a basket but you've also got to get, obviously you've got to get the answer right before you get the chance to get the ball in the basket as well.
Oh, so gosh. Well, if we're going to talk about throwing balls around the class as a sport, that is a big ELT thing, right? Like tossing the ball passing a ball around. But that's not really a sport, I guess. Another one that is any kind of races or athletics and Olympic stuff. Every time there seems to be Olympics, loads of teachers kind of design Olympic races, you know, that kind of, like, you can do running dictations, but you could also do, like, you know, I've seen loads of like vocabulary games adapted for an Olympic sport, you know, like javelin throw.
Going back to the weightlifting, that you can do that thing where you, again, it's kind of like quiz based, and you rank the questions according to how much weight you're lifting.
Yes.
so that if you get the answer right, I mean, then you've lifted that weight.
Yes, or thrown the javelin that far.
You can turn the whiteboard. You can with a target on it, and that becomes the focus of the quiz. But even I just think when you say racing, you're going. You know, even things like board races and those kind of things. Yes. It's the element of
running dictations.
Relay as well, isn't there? There's like you're passing the baton, and it's kind of so you've got the.
So basically, we continuously get a game in or a sport into any of our classroom activities.
I think we should do the challenges like name a sport and now change and now turn that into a grammar exercise.
Oh gosh! Okay, well there, that's underwater rugby. There's got to be some kind of pronunciation stuff there as well.
There's your next course book. Go on, pitch it now.
Excellent. Pitch. Then we had a pitch.
Didn't mean it at all.
Shall we have another break?
Oh, go on then.
Okay, brackets here. Cut this out. So the last part, you take us in and talk about cricket.
So I thought, obviously, I've told you my affinity with cricket, which if you've ever tried to explain to someone, is quite confusing. And there is, it's not very PC, but I guess these days, but there you can almost buy tea towels and things like that with the cricket rules for foreigners on it. It's not bad, but I find it quite amusing. So I thought I would finish my contribution to the podcast with an adaptation of that, which I found online. Okay. So the rules of cricket
for those
of you who are unfamiliar with that, you have two sides. One out in the field and one in. Each person that's in the side that's in goes out. And when they're out, they come in and the next person goes in until they're out. When they are all out, the side that comes out comes in and the side that's been in goes out and tries to get some of those coming in out. Sometimes you get people still in and not out. When a person goes out to go in, the people who are out try to get them out. And when they are out, they go in and the next person goes out and goes in. There are two people called umpires who stay out all the time and they decide when the people who are in or out. When both sides have been in and all the people have got out and both sides have been out twice, all the people have been in, including those that have been not out, that's the end of the game.
Lovely, Sean.
Lovely. Very nice. I am flat on my back exhausted just from listening to that, but it is very good. Please, let's include a link to that in the show notes because I'm sure
I've seen it quite a lot. On social media over the last couple of days, because like we were saying earlier,
the World Cup on as well. So
but also it's been accepted as an Olympic sport for LA in 2028. So it's kind of that. I think that was one of the reasons why that or versions of the rules explained have been on.
It makes perfect sense to me, but there you go.
Sadly, it makes perfect sense to me too. I spent a lost afternoon having to score cricket matches. So it's like,
Hang on. Let's revisit your sporting number.
But I think it took my number down because it would like, you know, no, I'm not going to revisit that.
Well, it seems that even after 100 episodes of avoiding this topic, we did find enough to go much longer than I thought. So why don't we call it a day there? Is there a sporting metaphor we could use here? Like we're all out. We're going to blow the final whistle, throw in the towel.
We're done.
All right, everybody. Thanks a lot. You can find out all our episodes wherever you're listening to this one. There are over 100 other episodes where we've tackled other topics. You can find us on TEFL Commute and on all the social medias. Thank you very much for listening.
All the social medias. That's a bold claim, Lindsay.
Lots of them. The original ones that we were using at the beginning.
Because we're of a certain age, we use a certain social media set. There you go.
Yeah. All right.
Bye bye, everyone.
Bye.